The civil rights movement gave America a compass. It wasn't supposed to be vibes or nice to have. It was supposed to be binding. Title VI of the Civil Rights Act said plainly that discrimination based on race, color, or national origin is forbidden in programs receiving federal money. Title VII clamped down on discrimination in employment. Then 1965 brought the Voting Rights Act to enforce the 15th Amendment, and the Hart-Celler Act ended the old racist quota system that rationed who could come here by country of origin. The era's through line was simple. The state must not police or sort human beings by race. That's the North Star. Now jump to September 2025. The Supreme Court, 6-3, lifted a federal judge's restraining order and let immigration agents in Los Angeles resume roving patrols that consider factors like race, ethnicity, language, place, and type of work as part of reasonable suspicion. The majority did it on the shadow docket, no full briefing, no oral argument. Justice Kavanaugh, concurring, said ethnicity can be a relevant factor when combined with others. Justice Sotomayor fired back that this greenlights racial profiling. Meanwhile, DHS bragged it would flood the zone in Los Angeles and announced over 5,000 arrests since June as proof of success. That's not policy, that's spectacle. Civil rights doctrine has always wrestled with how far policing powers can go. Take Terry v. Ohio, 1968. This case came out of Cleveland when a plainclothes officer saw three men pacing outside a store and suspected they were about to rob it. He stopped and frisked them, finding weapons. The Supreme Court upheld the search, creating the reasonable suspicion standard, lower than probable cause, but still requiring specific, articulable facts. That ruling gave police wide latitude to stop people, but it also carved out the rule that suspicion can't just be a hunch, it must be grounded in observable behavior. Fast forward to United States versus Brignone-Ponce. Border Patrol agents near San Diego pulled over a car solely because the passengers looked Mexican. Inside were undocumented immigrants, but the Supreme Court ruled that appearance alone cannot justify a stop. Agents, the court said, could consider factors like proximity to the border, erratic driving, or information about recent crossings, but ethnicity by itself was unconstitutional. This case was crucial because it put a limit on how reasonable suspicion works in immigration enforcement. Then came United States versus Arvizu, 2002, out of Arizona. A Border Patrol agent stopped a minivan on a remote road after noticing several factors. The route was often used for smuggling. The children in the minivan were not wearing seatbelts, and the driver was not wearing a seatbelt. The children in the back didn't wave like kids usually did, and the driver slowed down suspiciously. The court unanimously upheld the stop, saying judges must consider the totality of the circumstances. In other words, even if each factor alone seems innocent, together they can create enough suspicion for a stop. Now here's the key. That totality doctrine is the exact door the court just walked through in Los Angeles. On paper, Brignone-Ponce still stands. Ethnicity alone can't justify a stop. But in practice, when you add race to language, job site, and neighborhood, those factors become a proxy that maps almost exclusively onto Latino communities. That's why this ruling feels like a retreat from the civil rights North Star. When the state tells a multilingual, brown city that language and ethnicity can count toward suspicion, it reintroduces everyday second-class status. Don't gloss over the practical harms. U.S. citizens and legal residents get swept up. People change routes to work, parents avoid schools, victims stop reporting crimes, and yes, this actually happened in LA. The initial injunction grew out of evidence that roving patrols were sweeping up U.S. citizens and lawful residents. Let's talk about civil rights leakage. Once you normalize race, ethnicity, or language as suspicion cues for immigration, those cues do not stay in a silo. Policing follows habits. Incentives spread. We have lived this. Arizona v. United States struck down most of SB 1070, but left the show me your papers status checks after lawful stops, that carve out fertilized years of litigation and community distrust because it functionally deputized race as a proxy, even if the text said otherwise. The green light given in Los Angeles risks replicating that dynamic at federal scale in the nation's most diverse metro. Hart Celler in 1965 was a civil rights era immigration reform designed to end explicit race-based gatekeeping at the border. If 2025 immigration policing slides back to implicit race proxies inside the country, we are walking backward. The North Star didn't move, we did. And when DHS is online bragging it will flood the zone, that's less law administration and more public theater, deterrence by humiliation. That's why this fight belongs under a civil rights lens. Not because immigration enforcement is illegitimate per se, but because how we do it decides whether equal protection is real or just wallpaper on a cracked wall. Bottom line, the civil rights compass points away from policing by phenotype or accent. If reasonable suspicion is rebuilt out of race, language, zip code, and day labor sites, the compass is spinning. The court can call it totality, but for the person stopped, it is 1963, Jim Crow 2.5. Not black, but brown. Not Southern drawl, but Spanish tongue. Not Dixie segregation, but Central American suspicion. I'm going to say it plain, this is one part fact, one part theater, one part terror. That's not exaggeration, it's strategy. The phrase shock and awe, made famous during the George W. Bush era of war, fits perfectly here. The whole point is to make the experience so overwhelming, so unbearable, that people won't risk going through it at all. That's what's happening. The court's emergency decision didn't issue a full opinion. It simply blessed the machinery without reckoning with the moral cost of running it. DHS then amplified the performance, bragging about thousands of arrests and promising to flood the zone. When enforcement is staged for maximum visibility, the performance itself becomes the policy. Don't come. If you're already here, be afraid. And if you look the part, expect to be stopped. Spectacle isn't new in immigration. Family separation in 2018 was openly described by senior officials as a deterrent, deliberate cruelty to send a signal. Los Angeles, 2025, is part of that lineage. Day labor corners, Home Depot parking lots, arrests filmed and posted, even a box truck sting reported in local outlets. When stops are staged where they'll be seen, workplaces, retail hubs, you're communicating to bystanders as much as to targets. That's not core border control. That's shock and awe doctrine repackaged for domestic PR. But here's the catch. Spectacle strains the rule of law case for enforcement. If the state has a legitimate interest in removals, the legitimacy comes from consistency, process, and focus, not from public intimidation. A federal judge in LA said there was credible evidence of biased, indiscriminate tactics. The Ninth Circuit initially kept the order. The Supreme Court yanked it, and communities immediately read the message, your accent can get you stopped again. That's exactly the opposite of equal protection optics. Numbers, context matters. DHS touts 5,000 plus arrests since June. Local reporting showed that the majority of arrestees in an early slice had no criminal convictions, and many had never been charged with a crime. The agency's press lines, worst of the worst, don't square with the data. Spectacle thrives on category blur, keep the TV chiron on gangs and predators, and most people won't ask about the quiet majority of non-criminals swept up at a job site. And the shadow docket matters here because it cuts off oxygen. Full merits briefing would force the government to clarify exactly how the factors work together, where ethnicity or language stop being context and start being pretext, how officers are trained to avoid Brignone-Ponce violations, what auditing exists to catch bad stops, how many citizens have been wrongfully detained, and what remedies exist. Instead, we get a vibes-based green light and a DHS tweet that sounds like a halftime speech. That's not serious process. That's get the clip. Finally, spectacle corrodes trust. When people fear that traffic stops or job site patrols turn into status checks premised on how they look or sound, reporting drops, witnessing dries up, and victimization rises. That's not an abstract civil liberties talking point. It's basic public safety math, and it boomerangs. Once profiling is normalized for immigration, it teaches a generation of cops that phenotype is a lawful shortcut. The civil rights compass goes dim. So yes, call it what it is. This is deterrence by drama. It's supposed to be ugly enough that would-be migrants think twice, and loud enough that voters see action. You believe in legal immigration and order. No argument there. But order sustained by fear, theater isn't order. It's chaos dressed up as control. The court's totality logic might pass doctrinal muster. The North Star says it fails the justice test. Let's be explicit. I support legal immigration. Every nation sets rules on who can enter, how long they can stay, and how many people can be absorbed without stretching the system to its breaking point. That isn't xenophobia. It's called governance. Population growth collides with budgets, infrastructure, housing, healthcare. You can't pretend those limits don't exist. But the real question isn't whether to enforce the rules, it's how. Do we enforce in ways that uphold the North Star of civil rights while keeping faith with the facts? Or do we slip into theater and fear? Start with the scale. By 2023, the United States had roughly 14 million unauthorized immigrants, a record high. About 1 out of every 4 immigrants here lacks legal status. Nearly 10 million of them are in the workforce, making up about 5 to 6% of all U.S. workers. These are not marginal roles. They're embedded in agriculture, construction, logistics, healthcare, and the care economy. The jobs most people overlook or refuse are precisely the jobs unauthorized immigrants often fill. Now here's the contradiction. The common talking point is that unauthorized immigrants are a drain, taking more than they give. But the numbers tell a different story. In 2022, they paid nearly $97 billion in combined federal, state, and local taxes. Over $30 billion of that went into Social Security and Medicare, programs they can't even claim benefits from. At the state and local level, they added another $37 billion. They file tax returns using ITINs, not Social Security numbers, because many want to remain compliant. Think about the irony. People living in fear of deportation often go out of their way to stay on the books, while a portion of actual citizens don't even bother to file at all. That's the contrast nobody talks about. The IRS estimates that between 15 and 20% of US citizens underreport or avoid taxes each year. By comparison, compliance among ITIN filers, most of whom are undocumented, is extremely high because they know any slip could draw scrutiny. In other words, the group accused of taking often contributes more consistently per person than some of the very citizens accusing them. That doesn't make their status legal. It just makes the scapegoating dishonest. And when it comes to benefits, the picture flips again. Federal law blocks undocumented immigrants from most major programs. No food stamps, no cash welfare, no SSI, and no Medicaid except for emergencies. They aren't the ones living off the system. Their U.S.-born children may qualify as citizens, but the parents themselves are largely excluded. So when someone says undocumented immigrants are draining the system, they're ignoring that the law already bars access to those benefits. The cost of mass deportation, that's where the rhetoric collapses under economic reality. Economists warn that removing just 1.3 million people would shave more than 1% off GDP. Deporting 8 million could shrink the economy by 7% and spike consumer prices by nearly 10%. Why? Because you're ripping out the very labor force that keeps food on the shelves, concrete poured, hospitals staffed, and goods moving. You don't cut out the backbone of the economy without the whole body stumbling. So where does that leave us? Two truths at once. Unauthorized presence is unlawful. You can't just wave that away. But deterrence through cruelty and spectacle, raids staged for cameras, flood the zone pronouncements, doesn't solve it. It just burns trust at home and weakens the economy. A serious path forward would target actual threats, recent arrivals who skip proceedings, and repeat violators. It would expand lawful work visas in industries desperate for labor. It would update the registry to let long-term residents with clean records earn status through fines, back taxes, and vetting. It would pass bills like the Farm Workforce Modernization Act that convert undocumented workers in agriculture into legal, tax-paying employees. The point isn't to erase the line between legal and illegal, it's to make the line mean something again. Keep the border, keep the law. But recognize the hypocrisy in pretending unauthorized immigrants are simply takers when the data shows they are net contributors, often more reliable than some citizens. That's not an argument for amnesty, it's an argument for clarity. Use the law to bring people out of the shadows, where they can be vetted, taxed, and integrated. That reduces strain far more than any box truck sting staged for headlines. My position in one sentence: yes to legal immigration and borders with rules, no to profiling and theater. Much of this comes down to how courts read reasonable suspicion. Terry versus Ohio made it a flexible standard. Arvizu told judges to respect the totality, but Brignone-Ponce still forbids stops based solely on Mexican appearance. The Supreme Court's 2025 green light doesn't overrule Brignone-Ponce. It submerges it beneath a sea of factors that, surprise, correlate with the same communities. That's the conflict. Formally, you're not profiling. Functionally, you often are. Civil rights law lives and dies on what happens on the street, not in the syllabus. The LA litigation record documented citizens and lawful residents caught in sweeps. The district court said, enough, no stops based on race, ethnicity, language, job type, or presence at certain locations. The Supreme Court suspended that guardrail on an emergency basis. In the gap between those two rulings lies the daily experience of Angelenos, who now have to calculate whether speaking Spanish on a sidewalk increases their odds of a stop. That's the kind of calculation the civil rights era was meant to abolish. And this is bigger than immigration. The Voting Rights Act has been getting chiseled for a decade. Shelby County gutted preclearance. New cases threaten. Who can even sue to enforce Section 2? Step back and you see one continuous drift. The law becomes more permissive of disparate impacts, so long as the government can cite neutral buzzwords, totality, public safety, border integrity. That's how civil rights protection gets hollowed out while the text stays on the books. Immigration law itself grants broad powers. Statutes let officers interrogate, arrest without warrant in certain circumstances, and conduct patrols within reasonable distance of the border. Programs like 287G let state and local police act with federal authority. None of that is inherently unconstitutional. The question, again, is how you use it. If the practical rule becomes accent plus neighborhood plus job site plus brown skin equals stop, we've moved from authority to license. The statute didn't require that slide. The culture did. There's also a legitimacy angle. You can't run a high-compliance immigration system if enormous swaths of the workforce think the law is a trap. People won't file taxes if IRS data gets sent to ICE. Parents won't send kids to school if pickup lines become status checks. Small businesses won't call police after a theft if a stop for the suspect turns into a sweep. Legitimacy is not softness. It's a force multiplier. Every civil rights rule we keep strengthens the authority we have left. Every flood the zone flex burns authority to get a headline. The long view matters. Hartzeller in 1965 wasn't perfect, but it intentionally de-racialized admissions and helped build a multi-ethnic nation. America's success has always been assimilation plus law. Invite talent and family, enforce rules with due process and non-discrimination, and keep the circle of belonging open enough that the next generation invests instead of evades. If Los Angeles 2025 is the model, fear first, law second, then we're off the highway and onto the shoulder. The North Star test is simple. If your tactic would have been unconstitutional in 1964 when done to Black Americans in the Jim Crow South, you better be able to prove why it's righteous in 2025 against Latinos and other immigrants in Los Angeles. Totality is not a moral fig leaf. It's supposed to be a method for truth, not a cheat code for bias. Let's end where we started. We believe in legal immigration, and we don't believe people should overstay or remain without status. That's a fair, principled position. But we also refuse the lie that the only path to order is terrorizing communities. If you want fewer unauthorized residents over time, there are two levers that work better than the box truck blitz. First, expand the front door and clear the backlog. We run a 21st century economy on a 20th century visa chart. Fast track visas in the sectors we actually need: construction, care, agriculture, logistics, rather than pretending market demand doesn't exist. Pass sectoral fixes like the Farm Workforce Modernization Act with labor standards and verification, not wage suppressing loopholes. When you legalize on the books work, you collapse the incentive for black market hiring and raise tax intake. Second, create a narrow, rules-based status for long-time residents. Update the registry so people who've lived here for years, passed checks, and paid taxes can earn legal status with fines and probationary periods. That's not open borders. That's closing the gray market that strains schools and hospitals by keeping families in the shadows. This has bipartisan history and live proposals today. Meanwhile, target enforcement where it matters. Recent arrivals who ignore proceedings, repeat immigration violators, and people with actual threats on their records. The funny part is, when you do that quietly, consistently, without the flood the zone drumline, you get more cooperation, more intelligence, and more legitimacy. People talk to institutions they trust and keep the civil rights guardrails tight. No reliance on ethnicity or language as anything more than context, and never as the tipping factor. Document articulable, non-proxy reasons for each stop. Audit them. Publish the stats. Remedy wrong stops of citizens and lawful residents fast, with discipline and compensation. This isn't about handcuffing officers. It's about honoring Brignone Ponce while operating under Arvizu, the real totality, not the vibes version. Understand this. Analysts warn that if we take a sledgehammer to migration, we risk slower growth, supply chain shocks, and even population decline if net migration falls off a cliff. Deportation theatrics might feel strong for 10 minutes, but they can make a nation weaker for 10 years. Governing is not a rally, it's a long game of systems and incentives. I'm not anti-immigrant, I'm anti-chaos. I'm not anti-enforcement, I'm anti-theater. If your reasonable suspicion checklist reads like a census of who speaks Spanish, you're not enforcing, you're profiling. The civil rights era set a North Star that says the state doesn't get to police me by phenotype or accent. Keep the border, keep the law, but keep the compass pointing north most of all.